Now, our thoughts this morning are entitled The Lord's Great Army. And before I even get into the subject, let me first of all tell you, I'm going to try to give you a perspective. I work for a major hospital chain, and I'm a business continuity planner. And if you want to know what that is, I plan for things you don't want to imagine could happen. So we do emergency response, disaster recovery, business continuity. And one of the things that we train people on, did you ever go to a fire or police incident and you see how everything works and the people know exactly what to do by rote? And so one of the things we do in business continuity is we plan out in detail how to respond and then we practice. And the reason that that EMT can come and take a mutilated body out of a wreck and do triage and stabilize the patient, put him in a ambulance and take him off and it all works is because they have gone through it mentally and then they have drilled so they can detach themselves and see. I'm going to ask you to detach yourself from your human natural feelings. So we're going to look at a bunch of events and a bunch of things in process that will be distressing to the flesh. But just like business continuity, what we are doing is we're going to look at it from the Lord's perspective. And from the big picture, and we're going to exercise your minds in some things that may come to pass. May come to pass. I am not a prophet, but I am an observer of things currently in technology and the news, and we'll try to share some of those with you. And along the way, we're going to discuss this concept of the Lord's great army. Now, I will tell you, among the brethren, there are different views as to what the Lord's great army is. Is it very focused and only deals with the final phase of Jacob's trouble and Armageddon when they come down? Or is it broader? I am of the view that it's broader. This is the view that the pastor had. But there are multiple views on this. I'm not discounting either. But I do want to open up your eyes as to what this concept is. And why is that important to any of us? Why would any of us be interested in this concept of the Lord's great army? So where is this found? We find it only in one place in the Bible. And interestingly, it doesn't say, if you look for the Lord's great army, you don't find that exact phrase in Scripture. But what you do find in Joel 2:11 is, "And the Lord shall utter his voice before his army, for his camp is very great, for he is strong that executeth his word, for the day of the Lord is great and very terrible, and who can abide in it?" And so what you know notices what we've highlighted is the phrase that Pastor Russell paraphrased from this, which is the Lord's great army. So it's identified right off as belonging to the Lord. It is his army, and he says it's great. And thus the phrase the Lord's great army. So who constitutes the Lord's great army? This question was directly asked in 1909 and answered in the question book on page 23, and let's see what he says. Answer: "We think the Lord is going to use millions of people as his army who are not saints and who do not know that they are serving him. We read that he will use the wrath of man to praise him." Now, we're just going to stop here for a moment. The first two words is "we think," and that's exactly, I'm going to offer you what I think is happening and what I'm observing. This is what we think is going to happen. That's the spirit that the pastor presented it in. I think it was correct. And that's the spirit we're going to use as well. Now, interestingly enough, he says he's going to be using millions of people in his army who are not saints. So this is not the church. And they're not even going to be aware that they're serving him. Very important. So it's not the saints. And they're not going to be aware necessarily that they're serving him. He continues, "They will be doing a work to praise him and will not be aware of that fact. Just as he can use Satan as his servant during the gospel age to turn the grindstone upon which the Lord's jewels are being polished. He thinks he is grinding us to power, but he is only putting a polish upon the jewels. The Lord will probably use the mass of mankind as they will probably constitute the Lord's great army." So once again, they will not be aware of the fact necessarily, And he may be using the mass of mankind. So it may be a very large part of humanity that he's employing to do his work. Now, if you have an army, you have an army to accomplish a purpose. I'm going to conquer this land or pillage or whatever. You have a purpose in doing that. And that's exactly what the Lord is doing as well. He has a purpose. We're going to look at that. On the other side will be gathered the princes of the earth, captains of industry, captains of finance, with as many as they can gather under their influence. In the United States, this sounds like the 1%, doesn't it? Then on the other side will be the great army of discontented, along with the line of socialism, claiming to be God's remedy. And of course now, if he wrote it today, he'd probably say capitalism is the solution to claiming God to be God's remedy. All of the isms are being tried and found wanting. Instead of going into socialism, it will go into anarchy. And let me stop right there. Brother Landgrace pointed out a very important point about anarchy. Anarchy does not necessarily mean that everybody's killing each other and carnage, and it means they lose complete faith in government. The systems break down. Then God will let the world work out their destruction. After that, God will come by. His own power will bring peace and order to the confusion, and will establish the kingdom of his son, the bride, and the lamb's wife. And we say amen. That's the glorious gospel of the kingdom, right? That all are going to have an opportunity under perfect conditions to learn righteousness. So he had some real, an interesting phrase. The world will work out their destruction. Just remember that phrase. So what's God's plan in a nutshell? I will give this to you visually. This is God's plan in a nutshell. Okay, that's it. That's what we're on the precipice of. That's what's necessary. So anyone that's in construction realizes you have to clear away the old down to the foundations before you can build anew. That's God's plan in a nutshell. Now, just like business continuity planning, it's important you understand what the end goal is so you stay focused on that. So if you go to a mass casualty incident and there are hundreds of people from a plane crash and they do triage and they're organized, they have the end goal in sight, which is to save as many people as possible. That's their goal. And they are focused on that. So despite what is all around them, they focus on that goal and they proceed with their plan. God is no different. And so his plan is, once again, this present evil world, the old systems torn to rubble and then laid on a new foundation, cleared away. That's his plan. If we have this perspective, and this is important, if you have this perspective, then the events of this day, you understand. It's not that they're not distressing to your flesh, but you understand, you have the big view. So what has to happen? We have to dissolve the systems of this world. He's going to use the forces of this world to do it. They're going to destroy themselves. And he's going to do it as quickly and mercifully as possible. I think that's a wonderful plan. Now, what he said in the question book was, we've got the Lord's great army, and it's the establishment, the financial systems. And I'm going to change a little bit. It's the political and business systems, not just political. Because business, large business now is international, and many large businesses have more power than governments. Social systems and religious systems. We think these are the four foundations. Versus the masses, the common man, critical thinkers that are saying, what's going on here? Innovators and anarchists. There are people that, of course, want to destroy everything. And so what we have here is this dichotomy. You know, when we read in the volumes about the struggle between the haves and the have-nots, You know, quite frankly, it sounded to me a few years ago a little bit dated. But now with the focusing of wealth on so few individuals and some of the things I'm going to show you, we may once again come back into an era where it is very much the haves and the have-nots. And by the way, the middle class will erode in our country. Tomorrowland. I remember in the 70s and 60s when we went to Disney. And remember Tomorrowland? It was amazing. They had phones with push buttons. And they had flat TVs. And they had microwave ovens that, you know, it was wonderful, right? And the promise, what was the vision? Well, the vision was that it would be prosperity. You'd have a short work week. I thought, well, I'm going to be working 20 hours a week. There would be prosperity and happiness. So we always had the family with the dog and the children sitting around the TV, having food on the table. It was prosperity and happiness. And then there was safety and security because it was a prosperous world. What's the reality? Well, the reality today is we have a lot of people that can't get full-time jobs with any benefits. There's discontent and declining pay because we are now competing globally. So that means if you make $20 an hour, but somebody in China will do it for a dollar a day, you're competing against their wage because of transportation, because I can transport that item around the world for a buck. And then finally, there's danger and insecurity. Are anyone in the working force, do you really feel secure in your job? You are one day away from some executive having a dream saying, I envision that this should go to India or we don't need this business unit anymore. And it happens all the time. Really, the underlying assumption of capitalism is greed. Now, I'm not saying everybody that is in the system is greedy, but it's all about accumulation. So recently, with this tax break, the president said, we're going to give a tax break to businesses. So we're going to go from, what was it, 37% to 21%, a big tax break. And so they had these executives in a room just like this, and they asked them, what are you going to do with this? Are you going to increase wages? Are you going to hire more people? And nobody raised their hand because they were going to increase profits because that's what they're paid to do. They're not paid to give people a 20-hour work week with a good wage and full benefits. They're to maximize profits for the shareholder. That's the underlying assumption. And that's the problem with the system. You know, we were discussing just yesterday about how we have the ability to feed everybody in the world, but we don't do it. We don't do it. And we know under perfect conditions, the world will feed a whole lot more than there are today. In the Battle of Armageddon on page 548, we read, the social system, the earth, the elements, the course of nature cannot be set on fire until the Lord permits the match to be struck. So he's giving us this analogy, and we all, you know, if I was allowed, I would strike a match in here, but I'm not. But you see, it's sudden and it's violent and it's very decisive. The great decisive battle cannot begin until Michael, the captain of our salvation, stands forth and gives the word of command. So he's holding it back. Daniel 12:1. So the first thing is Michael has to stand up and give the command. Then he goes on to say, even though there were previously be frequent skirmishes along all lines, the great captain informs his royal legion, the church, that the catastrophe, though imminent, cannot occur until the king's own, the little flock, the elect, have all been sealed and gathered. The church has to be complete. So just like our brother said yesterday, he's waiting on us to finish making our calling and election sure. So that's the second thing that must be gathered. And then the match will be struck. So we are looking at a picture, and we're going to look at in Revelation at the Armageddon picture, the final phase. I saw four angels standing on the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth, nor the sea, nor any tree. Hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees. We're all familiar with this picture. And so what we see here is the four foundations that we've already mentioned, financial, social, religious, political, and business, all being, those are the four foundations of the building that we are in. They're calling them the four winds. Now, there are two aspects of this. First, it has to be loosed in the four corners of the earth. And that means it has to be worldwide. Now, I know what you're thinking. During World War II, things were bad, and these systems completely collapsed in Europe and in other areas. But the United States and Australia and Canada, these systems did not collapse. They were stressed, but they did not collapse. In fact, that was necessary to bring things in from the outside. Now, let me stop right there for a moment. Business continuity lesson number two. All business continuity plans depend on outside resources. Every one of them. So, Hurricane Irma came and visited us in Florida. They deploy from other areas and they bring in supplies. The example of when this doesn't work well is Puerto Rico, which still doesn't have power. Because they're an island and they're away from the United States, deployment and logistics were difficult. But every business continuity plan, from earthquakes to mudslides to fires, depends on outside resources coming in. What happens when it's worldwide? Every business continuity plan breaks because everyone depends on these logistics coming in. But if it affects everybody, the plans are broken. They do not work. I do this for a living, and I realize all of our plans are fundamentally flawed because we always make this assumption. But you can't not make this assumption in our world today. The other thing is it has to deal with all four aspects of society have to collapse at the same time. So just like the building, it all comes down, and the very apt description and visual image is when you put the explosives on the foundations and when you blow it up, it collapses, not because of the explosion, under its own weight. And that's what is going to happen as well. So all of our plans are predicated on bringing in outside resources, but when it happens worldwide to all of these things at once, there's a monumental collapse. And just like the demolition of that building where it comes down very quickly. And what is left? Dust and rubble. You can no longer get the building back. It's gone. The only thing you can do is clear the foundation and start anew. This is such an apt picture of what God has promised. How fast can these things happen? Well, here's a glimpse of how fast from Hurricane Irma, which we had in September of this year in Florida. Now, in Central Florida, we had a lot of debris, some roof damage, but very little structural damage. We were not devastated, contrary to what the Weather Channel said. If you were in the Keys, you were devastated if you were where it hit. This is my weather station in my house. The outdoor temperature is 89 degrees. It's 67% humidity. After 5 days, the inside temperature was 89 degrees and 67% humidity. Now, I know humidity is a foreign concept to those of you from Arizona. This was a sauna. The other interesting thing to note is in the lower right, you see 22. We'd received 22 inches of rain in 2 days. Now, we were fine. But what happened was they said, oh, you can't drink the water, so you got to boil it. And then they said, oh, we didn't plan adequately, and we don't have power at the sewage pump stations, and therefore we really want you to limit your use of water going down the drain. Now, what they're saying is, all of us have really good hygiene. I mean, I didn't smell anybody when I came in here, unlike third world countries. And we're used to that. And I kind of like to get a shower and feel clean and be in a they're saying you can't bathe like you normally would. Oh, okay. That's inconvenient. No power. Well, I have a generator, so I had partial power. No air conditioning. Well, like Phoenix, Florida without air conditioning is uninhabitable in the long term. Oh, no phone, no land-based phones. Our phone was out. And even our cell phone coverage was spotty because what everyone does when the landlines are out, everybody uses their cell phones. But not only that, Uncle George and Aunt Florence and all the others are calling you to find out how you're doing. So there's a lot of traffic and the system is overburdened. And there's no internet. Oh my gosh, that's tough, isn't it? Limited gas and the banks, they shut down the banks. So let's review. Don't drink the water. Don't go to the bathroom. You have no power. You don't have any communications. Limited gas and you don't have any money. Planning is appropriate for these conditions. Okay. But what I'm getting at is very quickly, just like when a hurricane hits, all of the infrastructure can go away. And what happens, I can tell you what happens. The first couple of days, everybody is very nice and helps each other. But by days 5, 6, 7, and 8, when you have no air conditioning, you're trying to sleep and it's hot, you can't take a shower, things start to get irritated and break down. So this can happen very quickly. Being a business continuity planner, I came up with a great solution to the sewage problem. I said, we're going to take showers in the bathtub and we're going to close the drain. And then I had a bucket and I opened the window and poured the water out the bucket. So then we felt much better. So, you know, we make adjustments, but what if the water didn't come back on? What if the sewage backed up in people's houses? What if there is no air conditioning? We are all used to a really nice lifestyle. I don't know if you know it, but you're in a bubble here. Only a small percentage of the world lives like we do. I mean, we get really aggravated if they close one lane on the superhighway. In Africa, you got 3 miles of superhighway. In Ghana, and it ends you going off the road into the dirt. We are so protected and isolated here. Realize this is not the way. But there is a danger to this. We like all this. I like wearing a clean shirt. I like pressed clothes. I like air-conditioned cars. What happens when all of that breaks down? You can see that society can come to a halt pretty quickly. How can this take place? Well, we have the Armageddon picture. And part of this is this preparation of the Lord's great army. But who are they? I'm going to give you, once again, suggestions. I'm not dogmatic on this. I'm going to give you technological insights. So I'm a tech guy. I'm a computer guy for the last 35, 40 years. I stay abreast of this plus contingency planning. And I'm going to suggest that the pastor got it right, except there was one element that didn't even exist in his day. It did not exist. So he couldn't have predicted it. But I'm going to say that there's a third leg to this Lord's great army that's not even people. It's technology. Because I don't know about you, but, you know, I wake up because this thing beeped at me. And I send texts and I can check on the internet and I can communicate and it's got all of these apps on it. So there are technologies, and I will tell you that every business out there uses technology, and the larger they are, the more technology they are dependent on. And once again, we always depend on outside resources coming in to save us. But what happens when it doesn't work anywhere? So we're going to also add this in, and I'm going to show you some underpinnings that do this. Steve Jobs. Now remember, we said the Lord's great army was going to be people that didn't know they were serving the Lord, and they're unknowing. Some of them are very good and some of them are very evil. So you got the full spectrum. He said he can use Satan, but he can also use very good people that are very well intentioned. Steve Jobs, agent of change. How many of you have one of these in your pocket or your purse? Virtually everybody, right? He's a disruptor. This only came out 11 years ago. I thought, well, we've had smartphones since the 90s, right? June 1, the iPhone 1 came out in June of 2007. That started the revolution. Now, we've gone to Africa, and everybody's got not necessarily smartphones, but they got phones, and they're transitioning to smartphones because that's how they get on the internet. They don't have other devices. They don't have computers, but they have phones. So in 11 years, it has changed the world. And now in the United States, there are more smart devices than there are people. Wow. So this started the revolution. It opened up the way for apps. So in 2006, if I had said apps, you'd say, well, what are you talking about? Today, they say, well, there's an app for that, right? What is it? I use FlightAware in the airport to find out what was happening with the airplane and why it was delayed and where it was and when I would get in. Right? There's an app for that. And we have an internet, or a YouTube channel called Bible Truth 411. Makes sense to all of you, right? Why did I call it 411? I had a young person come up to me and say, what's 411 mean? Now, I realize I have dated myself. Because 411 was universal information on the phone. When was the last time you used it? I remember when I used it, but I don't anymore. There's an app for that. And by the way, this is much more pervasive. So there are more smart devices than there are people. It has leveled the field for getting access to information. But worldwide now, everybody sees all the have-nots. The 80% of the world see what the haves have. Every day. What's that going to cause? A little dissension. It enabled the social media revolution. So Facebook, Instagram, all of these different things that are out there that the kids use. It enabled that. Now that's kind of interesting. We'll get how that enabled the Arab revolution, the Arab Spring. So social media, this is not an individual, but this is a media, a technology has enabled things. It makes all men equal, and it gives everybody the power. So if the police are abusing you, whip out your smartphone, you put it on, and you stream it live on the internet. And there's no denying what's happening because you're seeing it live. And if they take your phone and smash it, it's on the internet. Wow, that has empowered the people. And we've seen how that's disrupted the systems. The social forces have been loosed, and it enabled the Arab Spring. The Arab Spring could not have happened without Facebook and some of the social and Twitter. Because that's how they mobilized the people. And the people responded. So all of a sudden they had this communication network. And those in power had no clue what was happening. And this continues to happen today. So everybody is in power. And nothing is hidden. So all of those naughty things that the politician, the business people have done, are now being captured and being revealed to all. I think there's some prophecy about that too as well. And it's issued in the era of fake news. Now we used to have these, Tribune and all these other official media outlets that had some degree of editorial command and would make sure in their own biased way that the facts were relevant. But now we have fake news. So we have villages in Eastern Europe that do nothing but fake news. And the reason they do it is so they can get views and the advertisers pay them money. It's an income stream and they make up anything that they want. And then of course, other people pick it up and put it on their website as facts. Wow. That's a change, right? Agents of change. This is, I think, an evil one, satanic. It's a disruptor. It's an Islamic state. And they've radicalized Islam. They've destabilized borders. They're political destabilizer. They're social destabilizer. And they are agents of anarchy. And whether it's Islamic state or whatever is next, we realize these are forces that are working within our world to destabilize the systems. Jeff Bezos. Pretty nice looking guy, isn't he? He's a disruptor. He is the one that started Amazon. So he has disrupted the retail industry. I heard recently that the majority of gifts now that were for Christmas were bought. Of the online purchases, 80% of the online purchases at Christmas were from Amazon. He is dominating the market. He is destroying bricks and mortar the way Walmart, you know, Walmart destroyed the brick and mortar vendors and sent it out to shopping centers and Walmarts. And now the online systems are doing the same to those prior systems. He's broken organized labor. He's had a tremendous effect on the transportation industry. So we have a whole sector that's called logistics. So you know them as post office, UPS, FedEx, et cetera, DHL. And so originally he started working with those vendors to deliver everything in 2 days. That's a wonderful thing. I love it. I hate it. I love it. But now he started with one vendor, then he went to FedEx, then he shifted to UPS, then he shifted to the U.S. Postal Office. But what is Amazon doing today? Amazon delivery. And in Arizona, because you're progressive, drone delivery. Drone delivery. Eliminate the humans altogether. These are all wonderful innovations, and yet they have real social consequences. It's affecting international trade. So this is not just in the United States, it's all over Europe, and the tentacles are spreading. One of my favorites, Elon Musk. This guy is really interesting. So he started with PayPal, and that disrupted banking and finance in a way that was not anticipated. So we had online vendors, but there was an issue of how do you pay them securely. And so they came up with PayPal, originally associated with eBay, but it's much broader. And that disrupted banking and finance to a large degree, that segment. Now, of course, they're taking on the same kinds of roles. He started SpaceX for the space industry. And that's being disrupted because, if you didn't notice, he reuses his stuff. So he reuses his booster. You know what a booster costs that United Space Alliance throws away every time they launch? $27 million. And he's reusing the payload capsules as well. So his innovations now, he's undercutting them severely. This was the privatization that started to occur when Obama said that we're no longer going to do this for government, we're going to do it through private industry. He latched on to that, and he's exploiting that to the hilt. He's making millions. The estimate now is on the smaller rockets, every launch he makes a profit of $37 million. He's also having a big impact with Tesla on the automotive industry. Now, it is not that Tesla is going to eliminate Ford, Chrysler, and GM. They're not going to outsell them, but they are a catalyst. And for you, in chemistry, a catalyst is something that starts a reaction and accelerates it. So he's not going to be the one that does the change, but he's the catalyst. It's affecting car dealerships. Did you know that there are no Tesla dealerships in Michigan? And the reason is they require a formal car dealership versus just going, having a showroom where you order it on the internet. And so they blocked him from Michigan. Think about the jobs that this is going to affect in that industry. And of course, you can undercut them as well because that infrastructure, all those dealerships cost a lot of money to support and maintain. The car parts industry, when you see this car, you go from having thousands of moving parts to a few hundred. Very simple. And by the way, how long do electric motors last? We were up in Asheville, North Carolina at the Biltmore estate, and we got in an elevator that had an electric motor still operational that was from the 1890s. Whoa, how long does your gasoline engine last? Interesting. Unions and workers, so he's roboticized everything. And these are wonderful things. It reduces cost, but think about the carnage to people. Those are jobs. Those are people that are not going to be able to support their families. Think about the automobile repair industry and the impacts of going electric. Think about the road tax system. I talked with Komi Ajise in California. California is the leading state with regards to electric and hybrid cars per capita and in numbers. So they have a lot of them. That's a success story. So the air is cleaner, we can breathe. But where do we get road taxes? Based on gasoline. California road system is in a crisis because revenue is going down as more people adopt this technology. And how do you get revenue to do the roads? Well, you pass a tax. Pass a tax in California. Good luck with that. Right? Yeah. Or we meter them. Okay, so I'm going to put a device, the government's going to put a device in your car that's going to monitor your mileage and report it and charge you. Good luck with that. The trucking industry. So he announced his electric trucks. And autonomous and self-driving is part of this package as well. Not short-term, but long-term. When I go out and I drive across Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, when I'm in these rural areas and I see a house out there, what do I typically see? I see a tractor trailer because that's what supports really rural America farming and driving trucks. What happens when those trucks are 10 times safer than a human driver and they are autonomous? There's no driver. What will that do to the people? The energy industry, we're going to show you a graph on that in a second. Renewable energy. The airline and rail industries will be affected by the Hyperloop, which is a high-speed train. Well, you said, well, we got high-speed trains and they haven't eliminated the airlines. You don't understand. So he's planning from Washington, D.C. to New York City a Hyperloop. This will be capable, the maximum speed of this train, which is in a tube with a partial vacuum, 760 miles an hour. That's just under the speed of sound. And by the way, it's not going to deliver you to the airport. It will deliver you to the center of the city. And it won't need to board 300 passengers to fill before it can go. It'll be smaller units of 30 or 40 people at a time. And he's planning one from coast to coast. So what will this do to the airline and the rail industries? It will have devastating effects. And he plans to run it by solar. Woo! The mission of Tesla, to accelerate the advent of sustainable transportation by bringing compelling mass market electric cars to the market as soon as possible. Now this guy means it. He has taken his private patents of all they've learned on electric cars and electric motors and offered them to anyone. Because this is their mission. Now, how fast can things change? Brother Bob, I'm not going to go out next week and buy an electric car. Well, for the older ones, you actually might want to because autonomous driving is coming very soon. And so when you can't drive, the car will. I'm personally very interested in that for myself. So Tesla delivered an affordable, the Model 3, starting in 2017. Now, it was the beginnings. It's very low volume. It's starting to ramp up. But for the first time, a high-performance, desirable, reasonably affordable car for the mass market. Volvo plans to phase out gas-only production by 2019. I didn't say 2029. I said 2019. That's next year. They're not going to make any gasoline or diesel only. They'll either be hybrids or electrics. China has quotas that they've laid out that in 2019, 8% of the cars must be electric, the new cars, 10% in 2020, 12% in 2021. This is the largest automobile market in the world, not the United States, China. And so every major car manufacturer is jumping on board. The other factor that's affecting it is the Paris Climate Accord. And Europe is very serious about this. And this is the reason you'll see some of the stats on Europe eliminating gasoline and diesel-powered vehicles. Kind of interesting. Ford is committed to a 300-mile electric vehicle by 2020. Jaguar, Land Rover are going to do electric vehicles or hybrid electrics only by 2020. Kia's got 31 EVs by 2020. Hyundai is going to have a 310-mile EV because that was the problem. If you get a Nissan Leaf and I go 70 miles, I'm wondering if I can make it to meeting and back. right? That's the problem. But when it can go 310 miles, that is now not a consideration. Mercedes is going to have an all-electric fleet option by 2022. So every Mercedes model will be available in electric only. Nissan, Mitsubishi, Renault by 2022. GM for all models, I just found this morning, with by 2023. BMW, 25 electric vehicles by 2025. VW, all electric by 2030. India is going to ban gas and diesel by 2030. So they won't be able to buy any new vehicles that are not electric by that date. Honda, two-thirds of their EVs by 2030. France and the UK are going to ban gas and diesel on the road in 2040. And the Netherlands and California announced plans that non-EVs will not be allowed in the center city where pollution is a problem in the near future. You might not be aware of this, but this is a lot of change. So what does this mean? This is from Bloomberg. There was a report in 2016 updated in October 2017. Here's how electric cars will cause the next oil crisis. So this is electric cars. And as you see, I mean, so here we are in 2018 and there's 2025. So you say, well, you know, Brother Bob, not a big deal. Even in 2030, you're only talking about 100 million vehicles. How is that going to cause an oil crisis? I will give you the analogy of coal-fired plants for electricity. Is the coal industry going down? Yeah. No one will build a new coal-fired plant outside of maybe West Virginia because of the cost, because executives look at long-term costs, and it's not cost-effective compared to gas or to alternate energy. Well, Bloomberg in October 2017 and earlier predicted, it says that if growth continues at current rates, oil displacement could reach 2 million barrels per day by 2023. This is the knee of the curve where all of a sudden oil production starts to decline. Now, this is intriguing. So oil production declines. So what's the big deal? You're in the death spiral that coal is in right now. What is that going to do to the world economy? And by the way, who are the players? Russia, all the stands under Kazakhstan and all those under Russia, all the Arab nations, South America, Venezuela, Mexico, Mexico and so forth. And so we see this big crash. So we see this permanent systemic decline. So you have a certain number of players who are going to all try to be getting their part of the market. The market will continue to go down. Demand will go down permanently. What's this going to do? Now, I've always been intrigued because I think about the situation where how is it in the final picture that really the Arabs don't seem to be there? Israel's for some reason is living in peace and safety. It lists Persia in there, no doubt, and Gog and Magog coming down, but it doesn't seem like the Arabs are joining in. What is their source of power? Well, it's their oil. So if that permanently starts to go down, this to me was an epiphany. If that occurs, that could bankrupt those countries. And most of those are first class welfare states. So Saudi Arabia, very few people work. Everybody's on the dole from the tremendous amount of revenue from oil. What if that permanently declines? How do you handle that? So very interesting. Jack Ma, agent of change. Now, Jack's interesting. He's the richest man in China, and he has enabled this international commerce model to where, you know, you can get anything you want from China and you can get it in a few days. Donald Trump. Well, I don't even have to say anything about our friend Donald. He's got alternative facts, a quote from the book 1984. He does support Israel, and he was put there because God said, I need him there for a specific purpose. So, you know, we actually need to pray for our leaders, just as it says in scripture. This is an integral part of that demolition. We've got political divisions, and this is around the world. You know, we're not just talking about here in the United States. And we've got the new moral majority. And this is part of the reason that we really had this swing in politics. And it has to do with this moral majority and the Christians, really, the Christian fundamentals. They oppose abortion. Of course, the Democrats were very pro-abortion. And this LGBTQ and now you agenda that came in. All of a sudden, in like 8 years, all of a sudden, marriage and everything's okay and you can't say anything again. So this was a backlash. And it also includes immigration as well. Agents of change. Well, Wall Street, I asked Brother Len a while back, well, what happened to all the guys that were there in 2007? And by and large, they're running everything again. It's kind of like Groundhog Day. It's a repeat, warming up. And of course, now we're trying to deregulate the regulations we put in to protect things. So Watson as an agent of change. I don't know if you saw Watson, but this was a smart computer that actually beat all the grandmasters in Jeopardy. And I go to IBM business conferences. They ingested Wikipedia. It's a learning machine. But this is a learning machine that can understand human language and also respond in human language. So it's well beyond that. And so there is a threat here. We have entered what they call the cognitive era as of 2017, October. IBM announced it. And that's the era of thinking machines. So all of you that have professional jobs and thought you were protected, whether it's in the medical, programming, legal, tax preparation, or whatever, your jobs in the short term will be at risk, and it will have a big effect on people. And these will become irreplaceable to business. Once they're integrated, you will not pull them out because they're so expert. And unlike humans, they don't get tired. They don't forget. They learn from their mistakes, and they never repeat them. That's going to be a tough act to follow. Blockchain technology, another thing. You're aware of blockchain if you've heard of a thing called Bitcoin, but it goes much beyond that. And it allows security, distributed security across the board. And it allows transformation. Now, Bitcoin is interesting because currency is based on the faith and fidelity of the country. And Bitcoin is based on the faith and fidelity of your belief in Bitcoin. But as the brother pointed out, when we went off the silver and the gold standards, there's a whole lot of nothing that our money means. It's compared to GDP. So really, they're on almost an equal par. In fact, it's a universal point of transfer. And so now the major financial institutions are creating their own cyber currencies because they can transmit and receive money around the world and avoid tariffs and detection as well. And it's going to disrupt a lot of things. Quantum computing. Now, quantum computing is interesting because it's 100 million times faster than your best computer today. And what it can do is do something that these computers we have today don't do well, which is factoring. So that's division. So all of our security database is based on what's called DES encryption. And that's where you have two numbers that you have to have in order to break the key. And they're very large numbers. They're very large, hundreds of bits. And so in order to compute them, we can multiply really quick on a computer. But if you're given only one of these factors to find the other factors that go into it, it's very slow. It takes thousands of years to break that encryption with today's computer. But when you got a computer that's 100 million times faster, oops, the potential is that could be disrupted. So who cares? Everything in our society, from our cell phones to our bank accounts to our computer screen, everything uses this. So that's kind of interesting. Now, what are the trends? The velocity of change is increasing. So tighten your seatbelt and hold on. It's going to be a wild ride, and it will happen much quicker than we thought. Everyone said, well, electric cars are not going to take over overnight. They don't have to. All they have to do is reach that knee of the curve where they start to decrease oil, and then oil is on a death spin. And the parties are going to fight over the remaining dollars. But it will be like coal. It will continue to decline. We have total reliance on technology. Our hospital is down if technology is down, and most of your businesses are too, especially all large businesses. They are permanently broken if the internet is down or if their computers are down. Everything is interconnected. As Brother Len will tell you, when one market, the Hang Seng, goes down, it affects, it ripples around the world very quickly because we have wonderful communications. There's increasing polarization. It's just not in the United States, it's worldwide. There's worldwide bankruptcy. Brother Len's talk from General Convention and from March in Florida was excellent. It pointed out how everything is lining up for a calamitous fall. And it is unavoidable. Unavoidable. Now, once again, don't be distressed. We're trying to make you understand what's happening. It's exciting because we're seeing these forces line up for the demolition. And just like the demolition, we're all going to go out there, watch it go down, and it'll be wonderful. And the systems are being destabilized. So we are destabilizing ourselves by our dependency on all of these systems and aligning for the breakdown of government. So faith in government will disappear and there will be a void. So what's holding things up? In Revelation 7, 1 and 3, we read, "And I saw the four angels standing on the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth, nor the sea, nor any tree, saying, hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees, until we have sealed the servants of our gods in their foreheads." It's waiting on us. "Do not be distressed as you see these things coming to pass. We have now informed you what's happening and what may happen, so don't be alarmed like your neighbors are. You're here to preach the gospel of the kingdom. And so do it. This is a wonderful opportunity. Whether you're in the supermarket line or at work or at the bank, you can give hope and encouragement to the world in a way that no one else can. That needs to be our perspective. Just like that EMT when he's doing triage over the carnage. Stay focused on the goal. Stay focused on the goal. We thank our Heavenly Father, for from Him and through Him and to Him are all things. To God be the glory forever. Amen."